As Europe scrambles to store enough energy for the winter, there are growing calls for price caps on household bills. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Germany's goal is to have its gas storage facilities 95% full by November, and the nation's economy minister said the country is on its way to meeting that target sooner than expected. Helping to speed things up are energy-saving measures, including limiting hot water and light usage in government buildings and large-scale purchases from non-Russian suppliers. But not every country across the European continent is in the same shape. Gas is a major source of electricity generation, and as prices surge to record highs, there are growing calls for an EU-wide cap on household bills. Austria's Chancellor Karl Niehammer said it's time to stop the madness in the energy markets. BBC's Bethany Bell has more from Austria's capital, Vienna.
In a statement, Mr. Niehammer said a European solution was needed, and he called on all EU countries to stand together to stop the price explosion immediately. Austria is heavily dependent on Russian gas, but most of its electricity comes from renewables. Mr. Niehammer says its price must come down and be decoupled from gas. Austria's conservative-led government was initially sceptical at the idea of capping power prices.
That's the BBC's Bethany Bell reporting there. To Pakistan now, where authorities are struggling to cope with what's been described as the worst flooding in the nation's history. 1 in 7 Pakistanis has been affected by the disaster. Official figures say more than 1,000 people have been killed, while nearly 1 million homes have been damaged or destroyed, and millions of acres of rich farmland have been inundated with water. The head of the World Food Program in Pakistan, Chris Kay, says the floods have devastated crops following a terrible year.
We had no spring. We went from winter to summer. So there was no opportunity for effective germination of quite a lot of the crops that were planted. We had an incredibly hot period. It was one of the hottest places in the planet during the summer. The crops that were growing all of a sudden sort of shrank. And now whatever crops have been harvested and have been stored, you know, so much of that has been washed away.
Well, officials have warned reconstruction efforts could take years. Pakistan's foreign minister, Bilawal Bhutto Zardari, explains the kind of immediate help the country needs now.
Number one requirement right now are tents. I think just the province of Sindh alone requires 1 million tents, and people are still shelterless. And then going forward, we'll be focusing on rations and medicines, and because this water is going to stay in much of the areas, water stagnates and remains there for many months to come. We would have to worry about waterborne diseases and other medical issues that could arise from those.
He did say international help has already begun arriving. The first aid flights from Turkey and the UAE landed on Sunday. And today, the International Monetary Fund's executive board has a pre-scheduled meeting to decide whether to release at least $1.2 billion more in economic aid to the country. Central bankers from all around the world vowed to take aggressive measures to stamp out red-hot inflation. That has sent Wall Street down as much as 4% on Friday, and that selling pressure is continuing to pulse through global financial markets today. Japan's Nikkei saw the steepest declines across Asia, ending down 2.4% in today's session. Here in Europe, London is closed for a bank holiday, but benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt, and Madrid are down in the 1.3 to 1.7% range at this hour. Bond markets, meanwhile, are betting the European Central Bank will hike its benchmark interest rate by 0.75 percentage point next month to tackle record high prices here. No doubt inflation is straining economies the world over, but the factors driving it vary country to country. Today, we zoom in on Europe and the UK more specifically. Dr. Mohamed El-Aryan explains why energy prices are a huge driving factor, but labor shortages are another problem.
COVID has changed the functioning of the labor market. Labor force participation has come down, and you get the sort of disruptions that we've all experienced, whether it's when you go to an airport, when you try and fly, when you go to restaurants. The service sector in particular has been hard hit. What you're seeing in the UK that you haven't yet seen elsewhere is labor is pushing back very hard at inflation. So we are seeing strikes as labor tries to protect its purchasing power. When you have 10% inflation, your ability to buy things gets eroded very quickly, and you resist that. It is now a UK phenomenon in particular, but I suspect that we will see it increasingly in the US. Continental Europe is less clear.
Is there a risk that strikes could even further worsen the economic situation, because rail strikes that we had here, if it prevents people from being able to get to work to do their jobs, could that result in a further slowdown and more inflation pressures down the line?
Yes, it adds to the supply disruptions. We have three elements adding to the supply disruptions right now around the world. Strikes, for example, the weather, low levels of rivers and everything else that's also disrupting supply. And of course, there's the zero COVID policy in China. We are having that on top of the more structural aspects that we talked about earlier.
And the Bank of England hasn't been behind the curve, so to speak, on trying to battle these inflation pressures and the economic problems. They have been raising interest rates and they have been trying to tackle it, but they are getting a lot of flack for not being able to solve it. As you mentioned, the Citi forecast this week calling for 17-18% inflation down the line. I mean, is there more that the Bank of England can do? Is the criticism that it's receiving justified, do you think?
So I think that if you look at the Bank of England, it actually has outperformed other central banks. It's been the central bank that has tried to be very honest about the outlook, saying some pretty unpopular things, but trying to act as central banks do, which is technocrats that are trusted advisors to the rest of society. Governor Andrew Bailey has been criticized for that, but in my opinion, that's what a central bank should do. Yes, it got trapped into the transitory characterization, but it got out of it much earlier than others, and it started raising interest rates. The problem that a bank has is that it's dealing with a very complicated situation. You mentioned Brexit, gas. So if you were to judge in terms of degree of difficulty, what it faces is much more difficult than what the Fed face, but it's not as difficult, I want to stress, as the European Central Bank. That is where the policy challenge is the most acute.
And why do you think that? Is that just simply because it's managing 19 different economic realities?
Absolutely. It is managing 19 different economic realities. It is worried about fragmentation, which is the fancy word of saying the markets will start differentiating between 19 members, which makes monetary policy very difficult to be effective. And also, the European economy is very weak. I suspect we will see that it will be in a recession. It's going to be in a recession if it's not already in a recession. And it faces a very difficult winter.
Dr. Mohamed El-Erian, thanks so much for breaking this down for us.
My great pleasure.
Well, if you missed any of my conversation with Dr. El-Erian, you can catch the full interview on marketplace.org later today. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.